Last week was our first trip into this book of Jonah. And I shared an image of an iceberg, and I said, you know, when you see an iceberg in a picture, you can see that the top 10%, but you know there's 90% below. We talked about how on the top 10%, if you know nothing else about the Bible, you might know some trivia about the Bible, something like, what was Jonah known for? And even if you've never read the Bible, you've not been to church, it kind of sometimes even pervades in culture, and you might know that, well, he was the guy that was eaten by a whale. That was it. That's it. And that's the surface level of the story. But then underneath the water is where the mass of that iceberg exists. And that's true in this prophetic minor prophet text about Jonah. And the prophecy is very, very short. It's only about two lines, but the whole four chapters are about this narrative story of what happens to the prophet Jonah. And when we last left Jonah, he was at rock bottom. Are you familiar with that phrase? Nah, yes. Most of us know what it feels like to be at rock bottom. And many of us can point to a moment in our life that perhaps was that rock bottom. A difficult moment where things don't make sense, where problems are mounting and a solution seems to evade you. And it's just nothing. I can't see my way out of this. It's rock bottom. It's as low as it gets. For Jonah, he had been on a boat that was caught up in a ferocious storm. Through a course of events, he's thrown overboard. And you might think, for many of us, if you were on a boat and a huge storm came and it's going to capsize the boat, that might have been your rock bottom, that feeling of like, we're going to die. But for him, it gets worse because then the people throw him off the boat. You go, oh, I see, that was the rock bottom. Because the rock bottom is, there's a new rock bottom. Now he's in the water, about to drown. No. If you were with us last week, you know that chapter one ends in a new rock bottom moment. He is then eaten by a great fish. Rock bottom, rock bottom, rock bottom. I can't think of the movie. I've never seen a movie recently. It was some action movie and the chaos and war, something going on, and the person falls through a floor in the building, and the floor crumbles, and they fall. And then that floor falls out, and they end up falling multiple floors, and then they hit the bottom, and that's the kind of the picture I get of Jonah. Things get worse. Okay, this is bad, but then it gets worse. Okay, now it's really bad. Okay, now it's really, really bad. Have you ever felt like that, that the floor just keeps falling out? And when you finally think things are stable, it falls out three more times. Welcome to life, right? And if you haven't, live a little bit longer. Last week, I challenged you with a question because we're going to read in this text. We're going to find moments that Jonah does something, and your response is going to be, why would Jonah do that? And my challenge to all of us is when we have that moment, why would Jonah do that? To ask that question, but don't leave it there. Then also ask, why do I do that? Because Jonah, although the storm, thrown overboard, the fish, is pretty unique. My guess is most of us can't relate with all three of those. Maybe two. But we're going to find ourselves in these stories through his actions and through his words. So we say, why do I do that? Today, I want to add to that question as you read. Don't just look at how does Jonah respond to these rock bottom moments, plural, but ask, how will I respond? Because some of us are in them, some of us may be heading towards them and we realize it, and some of us may be heading towards them and we are unaware, and that can be how life goes as well. Now, what we're about to read, we're going to read Jonah. We're going to start in the last verse of chapter 1, so chapter 1, verse 17, and we're going to go all the way through the end of chapter 2, but I want to tell you, what we're about to read is not a chronological retelling, okay? Let me tell you where this is going to go, then we'll actually read it. In the first two verses of chapter 2, the prophet gives us, or we read about the prophet, an overview of his experience with the fish. And then in verses 3 through 6, he's going to remember the sinking down, what it was like to be in those waters, that feeling of drowning, of not being able to get to the surface, of seeing life slip out of your grasp. And then in verse 6, at the end of verse 6, he's going to recall a moment of salvation where there is a rescue. And then in 7 through 10, he's going to give gratitude as he returns back to the present moment. So if it feels like I'm jumping around in the story, I am a little bit because the author does as well. So why don't we put this up on the screen? And I actually have this in the ESV translation today. So I'm not reading from this. This is an NIV. I don't own an ESV. So I'm going to read along from the screen today. And the reason I'm doing that, I don't often use the ESV, but one thing that the ESV does, anyone use the ESV? I'm curious. Yeah, I bet it's pretty popular. It does a very good job of giving a really specific translation. And sometimes some of the sentences can be harder to kind of read and absorb, but they're given kind of like a more of a word-for-word translation in some places, and you'll see that's very helpful in the text we're going to read today. So let me read this for us, beginning in 1:17. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and the billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall look again upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped about my head. At the roots of the mountains, I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land. Jonah's rock bottom moment is what we just read. Thrown overboard, eaten by a fish, sinking down, then eaten by a fish, and then saved in this unique moment. Now, his rock bottom moment began. I want to give you a little bit of a recap from last week, very, very, very quick, but it's something we didn't actually cover last week. His rock bottom moment began long before he encounters this fish. I mentioned last week that part of the nature of this book is it is a literary, it's not just a proper narrative, it's not just a story. There are literary components woven in, and we're going to see that in depth today. And there is a theme that runs through this entire book. It's actually a dual theme, themes of descent or going down and ascent or coming up. Let me tell you about ascent and descent. Ascent coming up in the Bible, not just in Jonah. The theme of ascent, moving towards God, is viewed as ascending up, moving up. Upward movement is considered a good thing. It's a blessing. It's positive. Let me give you a couple examples. I'll just read them to you. In Exodus 19:3, Moses went up Mount Sinai to encounter God. Psalm 121:1, it says, the psalmist writes, I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? The Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. Where does he find the Lord? He looks up to see the Lord. If you would go and read Psalms 120 all the way through Psalm 134, each of those are known as the Psalms of ascent. Yes, going up. Psalms of what does that mean? It's looking up towards the Lord. It's moving in this upward fashion. And literally, these are psalms that the people would recite and sing as they were making their way to Jerusalem, a city on a hill. Elevation, moving up. They'd sing as they were going up. Now, descent, the other side of this theme. Thematically, descent shows danger. It shows an idea of moving away from God. Disdain for God's will that leads towards death. Let me give you a couple from Proverbs. Proverbs 5:5 says that the adulterous person's feet go down to death. Proverbs 7:27, talking about this woman, it says, her house is the way to Sheol. We saw that word here in the text from Jonah. Sheol is a word for the underworld, Hades. Not quite hell like we would think of, but it's this idea of where the land of the dead. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. Now look at 15, let me read 15:24. We see both. It says, the path of life leads upward for the prudent to keep them from going down to the realm of the dead. So how did Jonah, how did he get here and how did we get here? He didn't wake up in this fish. We begin with Jonah's disobedience and descent. The first thought today I want to show you is that rock bottom was never God's intention. Rock bottom wasn't God's intention. In chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, this is the recap part. He says, now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. Arise, translated from the Hebrew, means get up and go. He's calling him up. He says, go to Nineveh, call them out. As I shared a map with you last week, Nineveh was about 500 miles away, a considerable journey for this time. But it was completely over land. You're not going to run into a fish in that 550 miles. Instead, what does he do? He goes the opposite direction, over water, and encounters the storm, the fish, the rock bottom. Where did all of this go wrong? How did we veer away from God's intention, which was never rock bottom? Well, Jonah dictates the descent. We're going to move pretty quickly through this portion. He dictates the descent. In verse 3, chapter 1, verse 3, look at this. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish. So first, when God says rise, he kind of obeys. He gets up. You ever kind of obey? Parents, do you appreciate it when your kids kind of obey? No. Never. Just disobey if you're going to do that. Jonah rose, yay, to flee from what God said, flee from the presence of the Lord. Oh, look what he did. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Jonah dictates the terms of his descent. I want to make a little bit of like a disclaimer today, if I can. We're going to talk about ways in which we wind up in these rock bottom moments. And the disclaimer is this. Not every rock bottom moment is a result of our disobedience and sin. There are people here today I know that have wound up in a situation because of the actions of others or because of a diagnosis, bad news, as something that was out of your control. And that's going to apply as well, but I don't want that. I don't want those signals, those messages to be crossed. That if you're in a rock bottom moment, you are at fault. Now Jonah was. He dictated his descent, but this is going to apply to both. So though Jonah dictated his descent, God sends this storm, and then the theme continues. It says, "Then the mariners, those on the ship, were afraid. Each cried out to his god. They were pagans. They all had all these gods. Hey, let's start praying to each of the gods. Maybe one of them are listening." In the ancient Near East, there were many, many gods from different faiths, religions. And so they're just like, this is like scattershot, buckshot. Let's hope something sticks. Maybe one of these gods is listening. Each cried out to his god. They hurled the cargo in the ship into the sea to lighten it. But Jonah had done what? He had gone down into the inner part of the ship and laid down and was fast asleep. Sometimes literature, the themes can be like really subtle. This is not that. We've read three verses there. I think we've talked about him going down six times already. Down, down. He's spiraling down, down, down. There's irony here because he's actively making choice after choice in opposition to God. And the irony is this. He's the prophet. He's the Hebrew. He should be the hero in this story. In the ancient context, if there's a story, and we told the ancient audience that the characters are in this story are one Hebrew, one God-fearing a person who's patriotic. He loves his country. He's pledged his devotion to the king and to the mission. And then the rest of the story will be pagans. It'll be sailors. And in fact, it'll be an enemy nation who does not know God at all. Instantly, it's like, okay, well, I know who the hero is. It's the religious guy. It's the guy who looks and believes like me. The irony is that it's Jonah who disobeys and disobeys repeatedly. Who obeys in this story? Everyone else and everything else. That's why I said there's satire in this genre. Two of the verses that we've already seen in 17, but then in chapter 2, verse 10, God commands the fish. And what does the fish do? It obeys. This is not incidental. This is very intentional by the author. We'll see these next two in the coming weeks. In chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, spoiler alert, the Ninevites, who I told you last week, I gave you a glimpse of how atrociously savage they were, violent, despicable, in fact, how they treated their enemies and anyone who disagreed with them even within their country. The Ninevites, who are the worst of the worst of the worst villain, hear the message, and God says, repent. And guess what the king does, and guess what all the people do? They obey. And then in chapter 4, now you're going to want, if you haven't read ahead, now I ask you to read ahead, so maybe you've already caught this. If you haven't, you're going to want to read ahead, because this is going to sound kind of weird. God gives instructions in three moments to a plant, to a worm, and to the wind. And guess what all three do? They obey, they obey, they obey. Only Jonah disobeys. To which we all ask, why would Jonah do that? And then we go, oh, wait, what did Pastor say that I should say after that? Why do I do that? Have you been there? Have you ever made a bad decision? Give me a stinking nod out there if you're awake and you've made a bad decision. And then give me a harder nod if you follow that up with another dumber decision. Everyone has done that. And it doesn't stop at two. Maybe it would. It could have for Jonah. It could have stopped. He has, third thought here, he has a chance to course correct. And it comes from a unique place. Verse 6, chapter 1, verse 6, it says, the captain came to him. This is while the storm is raging. And remember, this is a pagan. He doesn't know the Lord at all. But the captain comes to him and says, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call on your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. Church, this is literary satire to the point of comedy. The pagan is preaching to the prophet. Have you ever seen a story where someone who is not religious responds to a situation better than you did? Better than I did? And there's a moment of shame. That should have been me. What am I doing? But in that moment, it can be our pride can get in the way, because now it's like, well, man, if now I come along, then I'm acknowledging my own failure, and it's sometimes easier to put our head down and keep going in the wrong direction. And here the pagan preaches to the prophet. He had an opportunity to course correct. Every one of us in this room have opportunities. When we make that first decision of disobedience, you are not bound to that, nor are you bound to the second, the third, the fourth. 1 Corinthians 10:13, the Apostle Paul writes this. He says, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to man. So nothing you and I face, no temptation. But God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with that temptation, he will provide a way of escape that you can endure the temptation. None of us, although we are slaves to the desires of sin, and those chains feel strong, they pull us towards it, you're not a robot. You and I have free will, and we can choose to course correct any time we want. And yet, like Jonah, how frequently we do the opposite. We don't take the opportunity. Instead, like Jonah, we become dedicated to distancing ourselves from God. He doesn't respond to the captain. Hey, man, arise, get up, put your eyes up. This, the author is very intentional. Again, he's telling him, this is a signal, the kind of thing where you like ask for a sign and then there's the sign. You go, but not like that. I want a different sign. He's dedicated to creating distance from God, and the result is that he is thrown overboard. And then in verse 17, and the Lord appointed the great fish to swallow up Jonah. Here's where things get really real. The first taste of rock bottom. Things change. Up until that moment, I think Jonah probably thought he was still in control, as we do, as I do when it comes to perpetual sin. Oh, I've got this. I can manage this. I'm comfortable with this level of sin in my life. And like I said last week, church, I'm not preaching to you. This is a message for me. You do with it what you want. If nothing else, this is me making myself accountable in front of a church, that I'm a human like you are, and I'm tempted like you are. And if any of us in this room think someone else is above temptation, we're putting that person up to fail. Here's where things get real. And Jonah realizes he's no longer in control. And he says this in chapter 2, verses 3, 5, and 6. You cast me into the deep. And I'm reading this again because we've talked about the theme, and I want you to see this. You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your breakers and your waves passed over me. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I went down, to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Now, here is another bit of irony. Here, Jonah, ironically, finds the thing that he sought. What did he want? Distance from God. God said, hey, can you come over here? And he says, peace out. I'm going to go 5 times as far away in the opposite direction. He wants distance from God. Do you ever get what you want and you realize you never should have asked for that thing? That's what Jonah is experiencing here. God says, essentially, I'll let you go away. If you want distance from me, to some degree, I'll let you have it. I'll let you at least think you have it. If you don't want my hand on your life, I'll remove it. If you want to go your own way, I will not restrain you. Now I'm going to pursue you. But he allows him to experience the thing that he said he wanted, distance from God. In The Great Divorce, C.S. Lewis writes this. He says, there are only two kinds of people in the end. Those who say to God, thy will be done. And those to whom God says in the end, thy will be done. All that are in hell, choose it. What he's trying to say there, keep it up for a moment. Just look at that again. There are those, hopefully here in this room, that look to God and say, thy will be done. What you want, God, is what I want. And then there's those of us who fall into this pattern like Jonah, and God looks at us and says, thy will be done. Do what you want, knowing where that path leads. So if we hit pause here and look at Jonah sinking down, hitting this, he talks about hitting the roots of the mountains. This is a cultural expression of like a weird, not weird, I shouldn't say weird, like a theological geography. Like, what is the world made of, right? At the time, they did not believe that the world was round and that they had these different ideas. And down below the waters, the mountains had roots that anchored them down to this bottom base. And then below that was this land of the dead. And what he's saying is he's arrived at this point, and now I've reached the bottom where the roots of the mountains are. And I'm, in fact, not just in trouble, but I'm disconnected and cut off from all of creation. And so in this moment, he's now out of options. That's beginning, he had lots of options. God says, arise, go to Nineveh. He's got 2 options. He arises, good job, and now he can go right or left. He needs to go right, he chooses left. Now his options shrink a little bit. Okay, well, if you're not going to obey God, now what are you going to do? Well, how am I going to run from God? Well, I could go over here. I'm going to get on a boat. Now he gets on a boat, and his options shrink again. Now he's on a boat, and the storm begins. He gets thrown overboard. Now his options are almost done. We're almost out of options entirely, and then he sinks, and then he goes down, and at some point in here, the fish comes in, but he has 2 options in this moment of what we just read. He can die out, he can give it up, or he can cry out. And thankfully for Jonah and for us reading, we see in 2 verse 2, it says, then Jonah, remember this is the overview, then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress. He answered me, out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. Aren't you glad that God always picks up your call? Not me, and probably not a lot of you if you're in this situation. Someone hurts you, someone betrays you, someone takes advantage of you, and then they call you. Now, my phone, it's over there. My phone has this feature, yours does too now, I think, if you have an iPhone. Maybe Android has had it for 5 years or whatever, that's normally how these things work. But when someone calls, you can send them to voicemail, and then you can see in real time the text of what they're leaving. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you done this? If you don't, ask someone 15 years younger than you. They'll turn it on for you. So let's imagine that you hurt me. You betray me. You do something to me that causes me great pain. And then you call me, and I see that you're calling. And I go, yeah, that's not happening. And I hit send a voicemail. But I'm curious. So I pick up the phone, and I start seeing what you're saying. And kind of moving past maybe the hurt and the pain, you start asking for a favor. You start asking for help. You start asking, hey, man, can I borrow some money? Hey, can you help me with this favor? Hey, I'm moving this weekend. Can I borrow your truck? Can you help me come lift? What am I going to do to that voicemail? Delete. Do not call. Report you as spam. And you would, too, because we're petty like that. God picks up the phone. God hears his call. You realize what Jonah did, right? He said, God, I would rather cross the known world than obey you. And then when that goes poorly, he cries out to God, and immediately God answers his prayer. We find ourselves in these moments, but God's always there. As far as we've run, we only have to turn. We only have to cry out. We only have to speak a word, and he answers. Your depth does not equal distance from God. Silence around us is not indicative of absence, and darkness is not proof of abandonment. See, God is present in our present suffering. If he was not, suffering would destroy us. Because there are stories in this room, I know, because you've told me, we've sat in my office, we've looked eye to eye, and you've shared with me your stories about loss and about death and about tragedy that shakes me. And I think, how could anyone survive this? How can anyone deal with betrayal that cuts so deep? How can anyone bury a child? How can anyone deal with a terminal diagnosis? Suffering is real, right? Darkness is real. Depth is real. Looming problems are real. And if God isn't with us in those moments, I am confident that suffering would destroy us. But because he is in fact with us, church, suffering is never wasted. It can in fact be the thing that instead of destroying us, transforms us. Psalm 137, I read this last week. Let me read this to you again. I'm just going to read, just hear this. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Whatever your current depth, God is there. Whatever your current darkness, God wants to illuminate. However long, hard, or fast you've been running, church, let me tell you this, God has been running in pursuit. You are not creating the distance between you and God. You think you are. Jonah cries out, I remembered the Lord. Now, Jonah isn't saved because he remembered the Lord, because that would make him the hero of the story. Jonah is saved not because he remembers the Lord, but because the Lord had never forgotten Jonah, ever. And this begins then the good part of the story, Jonah's ascent. We have descending, rock bottom. And now we see that there is, in fact, a part of this story where things shift, Jonah's ascent. Let me read this quickly, verse 6, 7, and 10. You brought up my life from the pit. Oh, Lord, my God, when my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came up to you, is what is assumed in that moment, into your holy temple. Because where's the holy temple? It's up on a hill. And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah, another picture of something coming up, although not as pretty of one. Back to the overview, verse 1 and 2. Jonah prayed to the Lord from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress. He answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. I hope this is encouraging today. And if it's not encouraging for you today, please hold on to this message, because it's going to be encouraging at some point, not because of me, how I've articulated, but because of God, because of the truth of this message. We're going to close in a song, as we often do, but I hope today maybe is a little bit different, because words can be difficult when you're at rock bottom. John, you can come on up. Band, come on up. Words can be difficult at rock bottom. Perhaps you've been in one of those moments, darkness beyond darkness, isolation beyond isolation, no way forward, right? What words are going to help with that? Words do not do it justice, and this is unique because for Jonah, words could not do it justice. So his prayer, pretty much that entire chapter 2, verses 2 through 9, guess what? They're all plagiarized. For real. These come right out of Psalms. He's not praying his own words. He's looking for other words to give shape to the things going on in his heart. Because there are some things that we face in life that there are no words for. There's no way for you and I to articulate. Go read Psalm 18 if you'd like to go see this. Oh, there's one on the screen. Am I distressed? I called to the Lord and he answered me. In Psalm it says, am I distressed? I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. From his temple he heard my voice. My cry came before him. He's just crying the Psalms back to the Lord. We're going to close in a song called Run to the Father. And I hope that if you're in a moment where things seem particularly dark, scary, hopeless, and words fail you, where do I start? What do I do with this? This is too big for me. This is too shameful to bring up. I can't tell anybody what I did. This is too much. That maybe just in this moment, these songs would give words and give shape to the things going on in your heart. So that these words that someone else wrote, just like the psalmist wrote, and Jonah said, well, that captures this perfectly. Perhaps this song would be that type of thing, giving you and I an opportunity to express what we need to express in those dark moments. And that's simply a cry to the Lord that we believe is going to be answered. Let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you for this opportunity. Thank you that you hear us, that no matter how hard and far we run, we never outrun your grace. You are persistent. God, you are good. You are faithful when we are faithless. You are true when we disobey. You are overwhelming in grace and love when we are obstinate. Lord, I pray today that for those of us in the room, hopefully all of us in some way, but definitely those of us who are in a moment of rock bottom, that this would simply be an opportunity to cry out to the Lord, to turn, to do what we can, to run towards our Father who we know from your word meets us with open arms. Thank you that we are never beyond your reach. And as we sang earlier, if we're not dead, you're not done. So thank you for the promise of ascent, that you will raise us up, not because of how good we are, because we're not, but because of your love for us and how good you are. It's in your name we pray these things.